Would you identify yourself, please?
My name is Ira Elliott. I'm the drummer and background vocalist of the Not a Surf Rock conglomerate.
Now, we will say that I didn't press the button originally, so that means that he had to do a sunglasses hat trick again.
Hey, I'm Matthew. I sing and play guitar.
And I'm Daniel, and I play the bass.
You were the cook the first time.
I still am, actually.
So you're still cooking, so to speak.
In my mind, I'm always cooking.
Thank you very much for the bad pun and going along with me. Okay, I'm going to ask it the same way anyway. It's said this band has had many lives. Do you think many of the people who are listening to Lucky, the new one, have popular in their record collection? Sound spontaneous, please.
I don't know, half of them, a third of them.
You've gotten A.C. Nielsen to do a survey?
Well, I don't know. Just you know, even the guy who runs Barsook, Josh, I think as of this taping, he has heard Popular. But for the first couple of years that we were on the label, he'd never heard it. This guy, Jeff Barrett, who put out Let Go on Heavenly Records, he'd never heard it. I think we've really, for the better, been accepted as kind of a different band. Even though we're completely very at peace with that song, and we play it a lot, and still get a kick out of it. I think there really are kind of two different audiences.
And I've read that you feel you're unlikely to have a, quote, radio hit like that again due to the changing nature of the medium. But then there are people like myself and KCRW and KEXP and others that do have a worldwide audience that can still embrace, you know, bands like Not a Surf on the radio and play you heavily. And we actually have, scarily enough, a choice to do that. So why not another radio hit?
Well, actually, I take it back now because it seems like Whose Authority is getting quite a lot of play, and I think Always Love did, and Inside of Love kind of did, and you know, I guess I just mean that experience probably won't happen again where it's all about one song. I think now maybe we've been around long enough that if one song did get a lot of play, it would seem to be about the band instead of about a song, but I would be surprised if anything got that crazy again, but that was more of a video hit anyway, you know.
Yeah, and videos changed, but we're not going to go into that. Yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't know about you, but I keep, by mistake, turning on MTV and expecting to see videos. I mean, seriously, because we were all there when it was happening, yeah. And I keep turning it on, and I don't know what's wrong, but these people that are doing reality, and I don't see any videos anymore, and when I see them, it's just a half hour of heavy metal. I mean,
totally. There should be like an "I want my RTV T-shirt" or something.
And even VH1 classics. But that's gotten scarier than MTV.
There's a video channel in Austria. I've been living in Europe for the past bunch of years, and there's a video channel in Austria called GoTV, and they do absolutely that. They actually play videos. They don't do anything else. The most thing that they have that's far away from playing videos is they have these hosted by shows where the band just gets to pick, you know, a dozen videos in an hour. And so that's it. The rest of it is just nothing but actual videos being shown from, you know, 24 hours a day. And they're usually pretty great videos.
So in between that big album, the big album, and Let Go, you still had a pretty serious fan base in Europe. Do you think that's because grunge really never caught on there and pop music remained a mainstay in Europe?
That's a really interesting question. I don't know. I think it's for much simpler reasons in that whatever footing we got with the first record, we kept more because our second album actually came out. It was in stores. It was promoted. We came and toured for it, etc. Whereas here, we really just fell off the map after the first record. But it's an interesting question anyway. I don't know how it applies to us, but it's interesting.
Because grunge really, when you think about it, I don't know that grunge really took off as much in England as it... I don't know that, you know, Mother Love Bone was huge in England. I think they were still listening to Britpop and other things.
Well, you know what? Maybe it wasn't as necessary since the greatest role of grunge was to take down hair metal. Since hair metal didn't really catch on in Europe either, it wasn't. You didn't need Adam to come at Goliath, and it was just another little trend. You know, I don't mean trend in a pejorative way, but it was just another direction in music it didn't need to take over the country. You know?
Yeah, and it's funny. I moved to the West Coast right in the middle of grunge, so even on the East Coast, suddenly I came here and I was I don't want to say attacked by it, because I'm not saying that Nevermind is a bad album. You can't deny what that did, But there was so much other stuff surrounding it that, like you said, yeah, replacing hair metal with grunge, I'm not really sure that was necessarily, for those of us that like pop, you know, it was a little...
It was necessary. It was a great thing. I mean, yeah. It was the only thing that...
It woke people up.
It's the only thing that could do it. You know, I don't think hair metal would have been taken down by some band like The Shins coming along or Arcade Fire or any other really successful band of today. They wouldn't have done it. It had to be like kind of its polar opposite. If you're going to have spritzed up, teased, super fancy hair, then I'm going to have long, stringy, dirty, greasy hair. And if you're going to wear the most feminine of clothes, I'm going to wear a lumberjack shirt. You know, it's completely opposite. And it had to happen. And it's great that it happened.
So on to Lucky. And so I know you like to put out singles. So isn't that terribly unhip for an indie band?
Who cares? You know, I think we always wanted to make singles. Every single song is some kind of a single for us. You know, whether that's a realistic view, who knows? But yeah, whatever. No.
Good answer. So the stars I'm seeing on the front cover of this record, am I to thank my lucky stars, or are we thanking our lucky stars for having it? Did you portray it that way?
No, but well, I think you know, trees and stars are these incredible things to look at, and they're free, and you're really lucky to have them, and they're there every night.
So. And just think, somebody pays for the record, they get the trees and the stars for free. If they do the download, they don't get it, right?
Exactly. But it looks nice. I think it looks very nice on the internet and the glowing screens.
Yes, it does. Yes, it's very special. I spent late last night. I woke up in the middle of the night and said, "Never mind."
You had to look at it.
I did. You've recruited some great players in addition to the band, a member of Death Cab for Cutie, and actually someone who I interviewed right here after, well, he only had a couple of cocktails, one Ed Harcourt, who is a good buddy of mine. Now we kind of email each other back and forth, and I remind him of that drunken performance right below here. So tell me about the you know, when you were going for the sound of the record and your choice of people to augment the band. Who wants to take that one? Anybody?
It was not planned out at all. For example, Ed, Matthew and him were just talking to each other via email, saying, "Hey, what's up? Oh, making a new record." And so he offered to record tracks on piano from his living room in London and then just, you know, email them to us. So it was all generally very spontaneous. And we were recording in Seattle. And we just have a bunch of friends there because of our record label being based there. And mostly these are bands that we've toured with, so we've become friends through the years. And it was just people coming over to dinner and coming over to say hi, because we were 20 minutes out of Seattle. And then, you know, since they were there, might as well do something, you know, get them to sing on something or play piano on something or whatever.
And that's where the internet is a good thing, because someone like Ed can play keyboards, you can get the Pro Tools file, you can put it in, and if you really want to be, you know, authentic, you can dub it to reel to reel just so you make sure it's analog, and then you can
right.
You can go from there. Let's head for the...
We stopped doing that. It was much too expensive.
Yeah, it's too much work to be authentic, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes. Let's talk about The Fox, which is kind of a backhanded political statement, although the opening riff does it all for me.
Oh, right on. Yeah. Well,
it's kind of a menacing little riff you're opening that song with.
Yeah, well, I guess in a way the song is all about that riff, cuz it doesn't, even though it does go to another part, it's really that was the hook that I've told this story many times, but you know, I wrote that riff and I said to Daniel, I wrote something I think you'll really, really like, but I hesitate to play it for you because I think you'll like it so much that you'll really want me to finish it, and I'm not sure what it's ever going to turn into. I don't know. And that happened when we had 5 years you know, he was saying, like, if it's not on the next record, I'm going to quit. You know, it got kind of heavy, but... Yeah, no, I know, but... it's a creepy sound, and it's a creepy idea, and Fox TV is a creepy thing, or the trickster in a story is a creepy thing, or the cunning person is creepy, the advisor to the king who wants to do in all the other advisors, you know, I think it's about that.
I read the article on your website about your love for the Ramones, the same as a New York boy that I have. So was it truly amazing to back him at that Iggy Pop tribute? I want you all to talk about that a little bit, because every time I play Wonderful World by Joey Ramone for that first album, you know, it's almost impossible to open up the microphone afterwards. So who wants to, I want you guys to...
I'll take this one because only because I grew up in Regal Park, which is the...
Oh, Jamaica, Queens.
All right. Yeah. So you know that Regal Park, being the neighborhood next to Forest Hills, by the time 78 rolled around, I was telling people I was from the neighborhood next to the one I was from because no one knew where the hell Regal Park was. But Forest Hills was where the Ramones... Right, where the Ramones were from, Forest Hills. Yeah. So so I was immediately smitten. And so when the opportunity came up, you know, we'd put out an Iggy a song on an Iggy Pop tribute record, and Joey appeared on the same record, and Joey needed a band to back him up for the opening night. There was a party for the release of the album, and they called us and, hey, do you want to play with Joey? And we all looked at each other and, nah, we're busy. Of course, are you kidding? So we rehearsed all week. We there was two songs of our own. Oh, what did? We did a Stooges song and some other stuff like that.
And I Want to Be Sedated.
I Want to Be Sedated. So we practiced these for hours, and especially I Want to Be Sedated, which we learned. We tried to copy the original single, really, you know, the same tempo, that feeling. We were like, because we're sort of traditionalists, and
downstrokes.
And so we get to rehearsal, and Daniel Ray, who's sort of being the sort of musical advisor, wanted to play it like modern Ramone style, which was like 30 or 40 or 60 beats per minute faster. He really counted off 1, 2, 3, 4, and I went boom, bat, boom, boom, bat. I laid it right down that old 77 pocket, and he fought me for a little while. But we ended up playing the whole song all the way through at that original tempo. At the end of which, Joey Ramone turned around, and I think I'll remember this when I'm 98 years old. It was just like the old days.
I like the harmonies. He's like, because we were singing harmonies and everything. He's like, I like it. Sounds like the old days.
Yeah. It was really a sort of a transcendent, like it was just an impossible experience. And then he enjoyed playing with us enough that he offered to come play some songs at the next show we played, which was a few months later. And he came on stage, and we gave him a list of songs we wanted to play, and we played 7, I think, classic Ramones songs incredible. With him, which was really
we got to pick which ones we were gonna do.
Pick your 6 or 7 favorite Ramones songs, and I'll get up and play them.
Do I Want to Be Your Boyfriend?
No, that's a good one. Judy is a Punk. We'll run through the list right now. Judy is a Punk.
Bonzo Goes to Bitburg. Do you remember Rock and Roll Radio? Cretin Hop, Happy Family. Judy is a Punk. Sedated Again, of course. Lobotomy.
We have a little trick that we use to fill out the rest of the hour, and I hope you'll play my game because we've done it with about 150 bands. It's called a musical sandwich. So we pick two of your songs as the bread. And then you each get to pick 3 or 4 songs by other artists in between. And even though we haven't pricked our fingers and done the blood thing, I'm now under a pact with you that I will go in the studio with vinyl and CDs and play it exactly as you ask for it to fill out the hour.
Who's authority? Sure. And shall we land with a beautiful beat?